And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report, brought to you by our dear friends at the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit them up. We got a lot to talk about. We got a full cast of characters. Myself, Bart Logan, with you. We also got Patrick Murphy. How are you doing, Smurf?
Splendid.
Splendid. That's great to hear. Sam Fahmy joining us again. Sam, how are you doing? No cello practice?
No cello practice, but the allergies are kicking my ass, so be that as it may.
All right. Duly noted. I think a lot of people are probably feeling that right now as we're getting into May here. See there? Nice little pun you had. And we got Ralph Schudel. Ralph, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I just scored a set piece goal on FIFA, so I'm really excited right now.
That is the sort of commitment you can expect each week here from the Massive Report podcast. We are all focused on the task at hand, which is breaking down a strong run from Columbus Crew FC right now. Three straight in 8 days, and they pick up all three of them. We, of course, recap the thrilling scoreless draw last weekend, but a couple wins, Patrick Murphy, for Crew SC in the meantime. I guess we'll kick it off with the 1-0 victory over Philadelphia. Aren't going to dwell on that one too much, but there are definitely some promising takeaways for Columbus in that one. The youngest team in club history ever trotted out for Greg Berhalter, and they, you know, gutted out a good 1-0 victory against the Philadelphia team that you should beat.
Exactly. I think when Greg Berhalter was looking at the week and kind of planning it out, I think that he looked at that, like you said, that Philadelphia is a team that they should beat. Obviously, they created chances when they were in Philadelphia, didn't score any of them, but coming off of the game in Seattle, you want to get some rest knowing that you have another game on Saturday. And like you said, they put out the youngest lineup in team history, the youngest lineup of any team this year. You know, a rookie in Luis Argudo, both Christian Martinez and Nico Hansen playing on the wings due to the Pedro Santos suspension. Milton Valenzuela at 19 years old. Lalas Boubacar, Zach Steffen, Artur. I mean, we could go on and on about the young guys. But, it certainly wasn't the best game that this team's played this year, but it was a solid professional performance. They go out and get the 1-0 win. Giassi Zardes, I believe it was, yes, the 52nd minute, and kind of a weird goal. Ball comes in from the right side from Harrison Offal initially. Andre Blake comes out for it, completely mishandles it on the high cross. Then Christian Martinez picks it up on the other side, sends in a low cross. Andre Blake also should have had. He bobbles Giassi Zardes is kind of right place, right time to put that away. And I talked to him about him after the game, and he mentioned just, you know, it's a little more difficult than it looks. The ball just kind of comes out of nowhere in between the goalkeeper and the defender, and you have to react. So, you know, while it's a simple finish because he just has to touch it into an empty net, being there and reacting correctly is what you want to see from Giassi in a situation like that, especially since he hadn't finished his chances the game before. I thought some takeaways from that match, obviously getting Giassi back on the score sheet, but Luis Argudo, I thought, played well in that, you know, difficult to replace number 10 role with Pipa on the bench. I do think that we saw, though, when Pipa came into the game, just the uplift in energy offensively. You know, obviously he makes things happen when he's on the ball, but even off the ball, just, you know, the defense respects him so much, the opponent's defense, that is. And, you know, he just makes things easier for his teammates. And I thought that was really noticeable in that game with him coming in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about Giassi Zardes, and we'll probably, you know, find ourselves talking about him a lot more. But I think just the finishing and being, you know, being able to be what you were kind of, you know, describing, a poacher. And that's what you expect for your strikers, or what you at least want from your strikers, but not something that you've seen from him in a lot of past year, in the past few years. I think now with the 8 goals, he's, you know, equaled his total from the last 2 seasons. But I do also want to talk, you know, comment a little bit about Argudo, the youngster who I think we were all pretty surprised. You thought that Pipa Higuain would, you know, be getting some time off during this stretch, but to see the confidence that Greg Berhalter had in him, instead of going to maybe a Christian Martinez, experimenting with Mike Grella, in the situation, you know, to put him out there, and he, I think, obviously did not perform at the level of Frederico Higuain, but is looking more and more, especially coming back from injury as well, like a steal in the MLS draft for Berhalter.
Let's not forget this kid was drafted in the 3rd round of the MLS Super Draft. And I mean, the exciting part about Argudo is that he's only going to continue to get better. And I thought at the start of the game, he showed moments of brilliance, but then at times it kind of fizzled out. But then luckily he was able to kind of string it all together, which was really kind of neat to see, just kind of that blossoming and see him kind of get everything grasped throughout the course of the game. And I, like you guys said, with Eduardo Sosa, I believe he was not in the game day lineup that day. I think Berhalter said that there was a chance he was going to be available for the Fire game, but I think it was something with match fitness, if I'm not mistaken, if Pat can confirm or deny that. But, you know, with Argudo coming in, he's really showing his versatility, playing along the wings and now moving to the center of the park. It's really exciting to see that, and particularly, you know, I know Crew SC fans don't necessarily want to admit this, but Higuain's not the young buck he once was. So if he happens to pick up a knock or something like that, again, the depth of this team is pretty darn good this year.
I think the depth of the team is something, and we can talk about this with the next, when we get through the next game, but just, you know, something we really learned about, and specifically talking about Argudo here, you know, as you guys mentioned, he's played on the wing. Against Toronto, he came in and played one of the more defensive midfielder positions. You know, he plays in the number 10 role, and Greg even compared him a little bit after the game to Hector Jimenez and his versatility, a guy that they're confident that, you know, you can put out there in a number of different positions and he's going to get the job done. He admitted to being, you know, a little all over the place at the beginning of the game, just because he knew the other guys that were out there, a lot of the other guys that were out there, had run quite a bit in the last game, and you know, so he wanted to kind of take the load off them. But once he kind of settled in, I thought he played well. You know, it wasn't a great performance, but you know, every time he's come on the field, I thought he's done his job. Obviously, everyone will remember the penalty kick he earned to get the win over Montreal earlier this season. But he just kind of goes out there and does what he's supposed to do, and I think that's what you want from a rookie. At the very minimum. So, you know, I think as he gets more time, we're going to kind of figure out exactly where his best position is. And maybe it'll be that he's a guy that can play all over the field, or at least in the midfield. But yeah, I thought it was a good performance in what turned out to be kind of a tough game, just because it was a midweek game and whatnot. And that's something that the team in general has struggled with. And, you know, to get the one a win, maybe not the prettiest thing, but you grind out, you know, a win at home, and that's important.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to talk about how, I don't want to say that game on Wednesday was barely a notch over the first meeting between Philly and Columbus in Philadelphia. The fact that they got at least a goal scored was good. So, but yeah, on Argudo, he had some nice moves that I was not expecting. His distribution might have not been as obviously as good as Pipa, but you know, he was trying to take things up the middle and then maybe distribute some stuff to the sides and let guys coming from behind kind of maybe take a chance or take a shot at it. So, Philadelphia game, man, that was a yawner. That was a yawner big time.
The distribution, the cool part about that is, though, Arguto, I think, had the back heel where he had Nico Hansen coming up from behind him, which was really kind of neat to see. And to see a youngster feel that confidence, to know that he was going to trust that his teammate was going to be right there, and he didn't look like he was going to be a kind of silly if he did the back heel and nobody was going to be there. But that was really kind of, pardon the phrase, guys, ballsy. Did we lose the PG-13 rating yet?
Otherwise, you saw a very strong, I think, performance as well from the Columbus Crew wingers there, filling in lieu of Pedro. We knew at some point during this three-game stretch, you're likely to see Pedro getting rested. It was necessitated by the league that it ended up this Tuesday. So I guess in a sense, that might have thrown a wrench in what Greg Berhalter was looking to do with his rotations for the week. But I think you saw very strong performances from the two young wingers in Christian Martinez and Nico Hansen.
Yeah, definitely was a wrench in the plans. I don't think you plan to rest both Pedro and Pipa on the same night, ideally. And, obviously, like you said, Bart, the Pedro rest was necessitated by the red card. But, yeah, I liked what we saw from Christian and Nico. They each add something different. And I think all the wingers, really, that we've seen so far this year add something a little bit different. And, as the season goes on and assuming everyone's healthy and available and whatnot, especially as Nico and Christian get more momentum with more games, I think you could start to see, maybe mixing and matching a little bit at times with matchups. If you see a guy on a wing, a fullback that, maybe struggles 1v1, a guy like Nico who, obviously likes to go at people, has pace, or Christian who finds a way to get past people one way or the other, it seems. I think those two guys can provide something a little different. They have more pace than maybe a Pedro, who is still pretty quick, but not that just long distance running maybe that you get out of a younger guy, and especially Mike Grella, who never was the fastest guy, but does have some skill. But yeah, I thought it was good that they were able to generate offense through those two guys when you don't have a Pedro Santos out there. See the young guys, help create some things.
Definitely encouraging to see the young wingers there contributing, and we saw them again contributing on Saturday with the surprise, the loss of Pedro Santos returned to the lineup, but in about 10 minutes into the game, maybe even a little less, was forced to be subbed out after apparent hamstring issues. Murph will probably have you update us a little bit later on his status and if there have been any, updates for Pedro or how long they might expect for him to be shelved. But, handed that adversity, right off the bat for this Crew team. Again, when you're already dealing with things on a pretty thin margin, giving three games in 8 days and you're trying to work your rotations out. So again, some adversity for Columbus, but the sub in for Nico Hansen, bringing him in, he put on a spectacular performance for the Crew, and really it was one of their more dominant games in recent memory, certainly of this season, against Chicago Saturday, getting three goals, looking like they probably could have scored about three more, I think, just off of posts alone. And to see them finish this, to look as fit and quick as they did, playing so many games in so many few days, it was definitely a very strong and encouraging performance from the squad.
Ooh, pardon me, allergies there. But how many times, guys, do we get to this third game in the match congested schedule, that Saturday game, and kind of almost dread it? I know I was the lone guy on the Massive Report predictions this week that
Yes, you were.
Predicted a tie, and I know Pat tried to feed me to the wolves a couple times, but
yeah, I noticed no one killed you for that.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
everybody loves me. Anyway, don't you start. Anyway, how many times do we get to this last game and sit back and think, "Oh God, this is going to be a crapshoot"? Well, the crapshoot moved up to Wednesday because that game was, as you know, Sam said, it wasn't really the most intriguing or enthralling game necessarily, but. You know, Crew SC really stepped on the accelerator against Chicago, and I think they sensed Chicago was kind of all over the place. You know, it's never good if you've got your designated player playing center back when he's not designed to do that. He's more, you know, gifted as a central defensive midfielder or a, you know, center midfielder or something like that.
Are you talking Chicago or Toronto? Because they both seem to be doing that these days.
Well, that's true. That's true, too.
Just wanted to get my barb in there.
No, there you go. But, you know, Schweine didn't make the trip necessarily to Columbus. And you had to kind of wonder, that lineup was a little bit patchwork. I mean, Dax was doing his usual Dax things with his diving and all that stuff, trying to do his psychological warfare necessarily. And then, you know, you never know what you're going to get with the Chicago team, whether if Nikolic gets hot and does something well. But I thought it was quite comical and kind of set the tone for the evening that Nikolic had the one attacking shot towards the stage, and it literally went sideways when he took the shot. So it wasn't really Chicago's night, but really great on Crew SC. Christian Martinez, too. I just thought, you know, if we could go back to Wednesday for a second and kind of move into Saturday as well. Christian Martinez had a terrific game on Saturday. So did Nico Hansen. These youngsters are really coming along, and I think I'm starting to thinking about buying a ticket on the Christian Martinez hype train.
I thought the most interesting thing, and we touched on it a little bit, but I really wanted to emphasize it there, was just how much more energy the Crew had than Chicago. You know, obviously you get the penalty kick in the first half, but you've already created a number of chances early.
Yeah.
You know, you have the potential penalty kick call that they reviewed on Nico Hansen's shot from the corner. I'm not sure why that wasn't a penalty kick. It clearly hit an outstretched hand on a shot on goal, but they deemed it not. But you get your penalty kick a few minutes later, and if you look back at that play, the ball comes in for Giassi Zardes, and I think it was Elliott for Chicago. Doesn't even make an attempt for the ball. It's just a lazy grab of the arm and a clear call. And you know, that's just, again, it's fatigue of playing matches so quickly. And the big thing that the Crew had was they were able to rotate guys. And Chicago really didn't until this third game, pretty much the same lineup in the first two. And then the fitness. You know, you saw it. Nico Hansen, who played on Wednesday on that second goal, I believe it was, the run down the sideline. I mean, that's probably, yeah, it's about a 60-yard run. You know, with the defender, you know, he has to beat a defender and then has a guy chasing him and still, you know, is able to pick out Giassi in the middle of the box.
The
and
guy
a good
was
little
draped all over him too.
Yeah. And I mean, little run by Giassi to fake like he's going to the near post and then pull back, left the defender there. So good for him. And then, you know, you look at the third goal and it's another smart play by this time a veteran player, or two veteran players, you know, Ricardo Clark. And Colin broke this goal down today for us on the site. But, you know, Ricardo Clark sees the run at the top of the box of Mike Grella. Sorry, brain fart. And, you know, Grella, without looking behind him at all during the play, has the wherewithal to just leave the ball, knowing that Giassi Zardes is behind him. And, you know, Giassi, you know, kind of does the rest there. But, you know, two fantastic plays by different guys. To set up Giassi, and you know, good on Giassi for finishing on both those chances.
And you know, somebody forgot to give the memo to Ricardo Clark that he was 35 years old and he's playing with these youngsters, because I thought he strung together really two good performances, and the veteran leadership of Ricardo Clark out there, especially with some of these youngsters, is really something that I don't think Crew have had. Out of a center, like a boss midfielder, ever since Tony Chani's left.
We saw Tony Chani.
Well. Yeah, with that, I think that's also very, and maybe we can touch on this later, but I think it also says a lot about where Mohamed Abu is right now in the pecking order for Columbus Crew FC to not see the time, you know, hardly any time within these the stretch of 3 games in 8 days. But I mean, you talk about that, the veteran play there from Mike Grella there on the dummy, but one of your veterans who benefited, didn't play in that first game in this rotation, but put on two of the best performances, two of his best performances for a Crew play, the Crew, was Harrison Offal. I mean, he was at his peak during this stretch. He had he put at least three shots off of crossbars or posts. He was a dynamic attacking all the time. He made a couple good defensive plays. I mean, Harrison looked absolutely like every bit the most dangerous wing back in MLS right now.
And that performance is pretty much what's going to make whoever plays on that right side's job that much easier, because now players are not just going to be worried about Harrison Offal crossing the ball in, but they're also now worried about, at the pace he's hitting the post, he's going to score.
Yeah.
And he's going to score soon because he's been off just a little bit. Yeah, Harrison Offal is there. You know what? And it's funny too, because, and I said this at the beginning of the season, and I hope I don't jinx him, so I'm going to knock on wood. Jonathan Mensah has had a pretty solid run of form this year. And it cracks me up when I still see people on Twitter or Facebook saying that we should dump Mensah and use his salary elsewhere. And I'm like, he has been by far one of the better. And I think, somebody might be working on something for the website about the Crew's defense this year and how it relates to, not just MLS, not just the league this year, but also Crew's history and MLS history in general. So that should be interesting. But if you haven't been on MLSsoccer.com lately, there is a What You Missed Over the Weekend article, and basically the bottom half of it is all talking about the Crew and just highlighting the things that have went in that Chicago game. This is a team. When they're on it, they're on it. But to be fair, they almost gave that game away in the first half. You had a shot off the post. You had a couple of other shots that just went wide.
Zach Steffen was on an adventure in that first half.
Exactly. I mean, it was just like you kind of had your heart in your hand, and you were hoping that once the Crew scored maybe a second goal, that basically puts Chicago out of their misery. And that's pretty much what happened, because after that second goal was scored, I think the third one was scored within like 5 minutes. And they could have scored probably about two or three more. Christian Martinez was really wanting to score. He just wasn't getting the ball on that side of the field. It was all to the other side. So this was a significantly better game than Philadelphia was. And I hope, by all means, this was probably Greg's team player fitness management masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can do that in other condensed weeks, which obviously with the World Cup, I think there is going to be some sort of break, even though the U.S. didn't make it.
Yeah, right? It's like 10 days or something.
Yeah, so you are going to get compressed games, and you are going to get weird schedules. I think the way this has worked out and the depth that this team has right now has really, really elevated how much more dangerous they are. I mean, when you have a guy from a third round draft pick this year that was able to go in and play well, and your heir apparent, Higuain, is still injured and hasn't even seen the field yet. So imagine how that will look.
One thing I wanted to touch on real quick, Sam, that you kind of jogged my memory, was Saturday night, going back to Jonathan Mensah. This guy just, you can tell, looks a lot more comfortable at the back now. And one interesting thing that I saw between him and Harrison Offal was the conversation and dialogue. They were speaking in their native language to one another and kind of switching off defense, which was just kind of really cool. It's not going to set the world on fire tactically at all or anything like that, but you could see that him and Harrison were comfortable on the right side, and him and Josh actually too were replicating the form that we saw during the playoffs, which was really neat to see. But you could tell he's jiving a little better with the defense now.
I think on the other, then you look at the other big DP. Obviously, no one's got any complaints really about Frederico Higuain. If you do, I don't care. I don't care. I don't want to hear him. Get out of here. Why are you even listening to our podcast? Turn it off now. But the other designated player, Pedro Santos, again, he goes down. He can't really do, you know, injuries happen, hamstring injuries. I know there are some concerns with those because they can be pretty fickle in terms of the recovery time. But more, I'm looking at the recovery time or the lack of recovery time that's been necessary for the crew when he's been forced to be out of the lineup. This was these wingers, Nico Hansen, he demonstrated on that run, that 60-yard run you mentioned, Pat, like, every single skill set you're looking for a player. He beat guys one-on-one. He outworked them. He showed strength. He showed speed. He had a good, you know, good touch over there, good awareness and will, you know, the stuff you can't coach. And then you look at Christian Martinez and what he's been creating, and you look at how young both of those guys are. You add a guy like Argudo, and I'm just wondering what we think about this team. Are they not better necessarily? Obviously, you're not better without Pedro Santos, but he's not making the impact I think that a lot of people would anticipate and expect with the DP salary and tag that he carries. And this team's looked all right without him. I don't know. I'm not saying that, you know, they should look to look elsewhere or something, but he doesn't seem to have locked down that spot as much as you would expect.
Not to play heel necessarily, but I'm going to put on my heel hat here for a second. I would argue that Crew SC is better without Pedro Santos, and here's why. It's what you outlined here perfectly, Bart, is you've got great performance here from Christian Martinez, Nico Hansen, Luis Argudo. I mean, these youngsters are really stepping up, and you're getting great production, and then added in the fold, Mike Grella, who's really come in and kind of cemented his place on the team in a very short period of time. I mean, we were here a couple weeks ago with Murph talking about him playing against the University of Louisville in a scrimmage and still maybe being about a month away from coming back onto the pitch, but he's come on and made a tremendous impact. And I think getting that goal in his debut maybe was the ember that sparks the fire.
You know, I'm going to defend Pedro. So I think Pedro's job...
Good, because if you didn't, I was going to.
Yeah, I think Pedro's job on this team is to frustrate defenses. And I don't necessarily actually even look at his job as scoring goals or even assists. I think his job is to play off of Higuain. And in doing that, it drives defenses nuts, because the only thing they can do to him is hack at his legs right outside the box. And I don't have a problem with that. I think that in a team dynamic, sometimes you need that guy that is just going to frustrate. Martinez kind of does the same thing too, where he dances around. If you notice, he almost got in a fight in that Chicago game or in the Philly game down. And Will Trapp had to like completely pull him away because he danced around a guy and frustrated him, and the guy kicked at his legs. So, to me, I think Pedro is really good at that. He's almost like Eddie Gavin without the scoring touch of Eddie Gavin. But if you remember, Eddie Gavin was the most hacked player in MLS history, like in the number of fouls that he got. And I think that that's very good for a team like the Crew. I wish they would just be able to produce more out of the set pieces that he creates around the box.
And that's, you got to score set piece goals for that to be effective, though. In my argument, I'm not saying you're wrong.
But that's the point, is that he's doing all the work. You just actually have to, you know, finish it off.
I think he also is underappreciated for what he does defensively, similarly to what Ethan Finley offered when he was on the wing there. You know, his willingness to get back defensively, his ability to do it. I mean, we saw it go as far as him playing wing back last year in the playoffs against Toronto in Toronto. You know, Greg trusts him to do the defensive work. The guy just runs a ton. I think, you know, yes, it has not shown up statistically for him yet. I do think that that's all there. But yeah, I think I don't think this team is any better without him on the field. You know, I think the young guys bring a lot of energy and, you know, a lot of you know, a term that Greg used a lot, fearlessness and whatnot. But in terms of savvy play and things like that, I think there's a lot of attacks that involve Pedro, and, you know, he's maybe the third or fourth pass away from, you know, a potential cross that leads to a goal, but still plays an important part. And I'm not saying that Nico and Christian can't do that. Obviously Mike can, but I think, you know, Greg said today that Pedro is going to be out at least a week with a hamstring strain. I think if period, you're going to start to notice, you know, some of the things that he does that maybe aren't being done on the field.
It'll certainly be interesting. I don't think that the Crew are better without Pedro, but I would just argue that, especially, you know, a lot of the stuff to be frustrating for defenses and Eddie Gavin, you know, without the scoring, those are great qualities, but you're paying him to be a designated player. And you look at what Christian Martinez is getting paid, something like, you know, $70,000 or something a year. And then you look at what you're paying Pedro Santos, and just with the MLS rules, how weird and arcane they are with designated players, in and of itself, that's the reality of it. And so when when you're paying somebody big money and you can only have so many players that you can pay big money, I think you need to produce. I think that's one of the same reasons why I have the concerns about Mohamed Abu. When you've only got a set number of international slots, you would expect someone to contribute. And to not see Mohamed Abu really at all over this 3-game and 8-day stretch, I think that's pretty telling. I don't know if anyone else, you know, that was a red flag for anyone else here, but I just think if he's, unless they're pursuing, you know, a green card, and this isn't an indictment of him as a player, but I think you need, when you've only got a set amount of internationals, you need to have all of them contributing. And if you're the number four choice for a team at center midfielder, and you can't see the pitch, you know, for more than 15 minutes, in 3 games and 8 days, that shows you're pretty far down.
I disagree. I think not only did Greg play the minute management game well, I think he also played the matchup game well. I think if you played Mohamed Abu in place of Ricardo Clark, I don't think you would have gotten the same activity in the back. I mean, I think Ricardo was very, very active. And in turn, I think that helped Artur be a little bit more loose and not as worried. But I think when you have Artur and Mohamed Abu in that midfield pairing, you kind of lose something there. Yes, I don't think Mohamed Abu is bad. I just think for this game, I think Ricardo Clark was a significantly better choice from a matchup standpoint than Abu would have been. It was a complete surprise to see that trap sat for the game, the whole game. That was really weird. But if you're going to replace experience with experience, then I think that was the right choice.
Yeah, and following up with that, last year when Mohamed had to play a little bit more, and into the playoffs when Artur was suspended for that NYCFC game, the way I sort of looked at it and the way it kind of became apparent to me is that when he's on the field, he needs to be able, like, he's best in a game where he's going to be able to get on the ball and have time to turn and play and interchange with his teammates and whatnot. Whereas a game like NYCFC last year, when they're pressing, you know, everybody, they're fighting for their lives essentially in the playoffs, you know, he doesn't get that time. He's turning the ball over and, you know, in some bad areas. And, you know, I think that right now Greg trusts Ricardo as a veteran, as a guy who knows this league, to kind of handle those things in the right way. I don't think that means we've seen the end of Mohamed Abu. I think, you know, he's a guy who continues to fight for playing time. And, you know, I think in certain situations throughout the year, we'll see him. You know, this team, obviously, this is their first, you know, match congestion, but we're going to have opening up games coming up and whatnot, and that's going to provide opportunities for guys like him to show what he can do and whatnot. So I think we'll certainly see more of him. I think he definitely has a role that he can play on this team. But I do think, you know, they went out to get a guy like Ricardo Clark for a reason. They saw something in him to add some depth in there and whatnot. And, you know, obviously they've utilized that thus far.
Well, someone that there are at least no questions about his place in the team right now is Giassi Zardes. If you check the top of the MLS scoring golden boot standings today, you'd see Giassi's glorious golden mane there right at number one. 8 goals with 3 in these past 2 games. And, you know, Saturday was one of his best performances in black and gold. He had the 2 goals, you know, a clinical tap-in, not dissimilar to the goal he scored against Philadelphia, and then a just a very strong shot on the dummy from Mike Grella, a powerful shot, one of his, you know, more impressive finishes. You talked about him drawing the penalty that Pipa scored. I do also want to comment or see if you guys, I don't know if Patrick, if anyone talked with Greg Berhalter or Pipa after the game about taking that shot at the south end. I know he's had some kind of demons in there, but let's talk a little bit.
I think that's why he just blasted it as hard as he could.
Yeah, I was completely terrified that he was going to miss that.
If the goalie's going to stand there, it's going through his body, I think was the intent there. But no, we didn't talk to him about it. But he definitely has made comments before about that south end.
It was interesting, but you know, Zardes, he draws it there. He could have scored a couple other times, had that great header that went off the post. And, you know, thoughts 1/3 of the way through the season. I know there have been, you know, the games we've all been frustrated. But I think if you told us, you know, hey, he's going to have 8 goals in 1/3 of the way through the season, or if you told us, hey, he's going to score 16 goals total the whole season, which again, if he goes gets eight through the rest of the, you know, 2/3 of the game, I think most of us would have been happy. Giassi Zardes has looked, I mean, clinical in these past 2 games.
Yeah, I think you're seeing what you're going to get from Giassi, you know, put in this system where they're going to create chances for him. There are going to be, you know, he's going to get those chances. And there's going to be a game, you know, like Philly, for instance, and there's been a couple other games where I felt like he wasn't nearly as involved as he should have been. And that's not a knock on him necessarily, but his teammates creating chances for him, putting him in the right places to get those goals. And you saw it in these games. You know, even though there was the mistakes by Andre Blake, you know, Christian Martinez puts in a hard cross that's able to sneak through, and you know, you give Giassi a very good opportunity. Same with in the Chicago game, you know, Nico Hansen does all the hard work, but Giassi has to be there. He gets to the right place, and you know, Nico gives him the opportunity, he finishes it. The same thing with the goal that Grella left. You know, it's these opportunities that I think he lacked these last few years in LA. And you're seeing that, you know, there's going to be games when you're disappointed with his performances. I think like any striker, he's not going to be perfect every game. But I do think you're seeing that when these chances come his way, he's certainly able to do it. And you mentioned earlier, Bart, that second goal he had on Saturday was a really good finish, you know, curling it around. I mean, the keeper was left flat-footed, so maybe you could have just tucked it in the corner, but that curling shot that probably would have beaten him even if he had been able to dive, you know, I thought that was very impressive. And the runs he's starting to make, we're seeing more and more, you know, just putting himself in the right places. Even, you know, you go back to Seattle last week, the chance that he missed on the breakaway, you know, again, right place. You know, of course you want him to finish that, changes the game. You know, you're looking at that differently, but he's getting himself opportunities. His teammates are starting to learn what he wants to do. And yeah, 8 goals this quickly through the season. I mean, you know, the Crews played 12 games. He has 8 goals. As you mentioned, top of the league. I think he's tied with Joseph Martinez now. But you know, I don't think anyone can be disappointed with the return that they're getting from that Ola Kamara trade. And now Ola's scored, I think, in 3 straight. So, you know, you might get that extra TAM money if he keeps that up.
Ralph and Sam, no one wants to gush about Giassi Zardes right now?
I mean, the thing that I'll say is that I've thought of for a while is that I find it comical, myself included, that when Giassi came to Crew SC, a lot of people were kind of cringing and going, wow, LA really won the trade on this one. And it's just, Sam and I were talking about it on Saturday, is that Greg Berhalter is the striker whisperer, essentially. And he can make these players that, you know, Ola Kamara, no less. I mean, he was good in the championship or wherever he came from before. Kai, even, as much as that pains me to say, when he was at Norwich or Middlesbrough, was not putting up at the level that he was putting up here, being in the Golden Boot race. And the fact that we're talking about one third of the way in the season, a Crew SC player leading the Golden Boot race without any penalty kicks is really exciting.
Didn't he get one?
He had a penalty kick.
Oh, he's got one. He's got one. Yeah, I was getting ready for my post game show. I didn't see that one.
Kai was in the Golden Boot race without any penalty kicks, mm-hmm. as he so nicely reminded us 2 years ago last week.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I think once this team starts, you know, like Murph said, he said, once they're starting to figure out how he plays and how he likes to get the ball and does his one-touch thing into the back of the net. I mean, the second goal, literally, the ball, even though Grella kind of dummied it, but that ball was behind him. He actually had to, like, step back a couple of steps, and then he one-timed it so hard that the goalie didn't even move. So that was a solid goal. I really liked it. My problem with the system has always been consistency. If you execute it consistently, if you execute it consistently, this team could be very, very hard to beat. And by golly, man, they were kind of consistent on Saturday. And I'd want to see more of that, you know, in that process.
Well, and one last thing, I think, you know, we mentioned teammates getting used to Giassi. It's also Giassi getting used to the system. And obviously he comes in and has a good preseason and then, you know, scores three goals in the first two. You know, I think we're, you know, not necessarily system-based. You know, it was a little bit right place, right time. But I think you're seeing now he knows, like I mentioned on that goal that on the run from Nico, you know, he knows to make that first move towards the near post and then pull back because Nico's putting that ball closer to the penalty spot. You know, the one with Grella, maybe he sees it a little late because he's ball to go through his legs like that, but you know, he's reading the situation, he's reading his teammates, I think, better. And I think he's only going to continue to progress. Now, you know, I don't know if I'm projecting him for 30 plus goals or whatever he's on pace for, but you know, I do think he's a guy who could, you know, be close to that 20 goal mark. And you know, make a push for the Golden Boot. You know, assuming health, assuming, you know, consistency and whatnot. But like I said before, I don't think you can talk about, or you can be upset with the performances you're getting out of him, you know, on a first third of the season basis.
Speaking of performances through the first third of the season that we're not going to be upset about, the Columbus back line, how great they have been defensively. We're at three straight.
It's nice to say, right?
It absolutely.
We haven't said that too much throughout the Berhalter era.
And I think you've heard Greg Berhalter and some of these other players kind of echo those. I think they're a little bit surprised with how strong they've been and stalwart defensively this season. I know Columbus, among the lowest scored on teams in MLS. I did see some stats that, you know, I think they goal differential, just 10 goals allowed in 12 games played. You know, it looks like a case where you're expecting this team at some point, especially, you know, with this track record of how this defense has allowed goals, to kind of start regressing to the mean. And, you know, not to, you know, knock on wood, that won't be happening anytime soon. But it didn't. You would have thought you would have seen that here during the stretch, when you've got guys who are rotating, you're not seeing the same back line in all four of those games. It changed from game to game, a lot of different personnel. So it's been hard, and you've seen changes with the center backs. But three games in a row, that's the first time they've done it since Robert Warzeha was on the touch lines. And has this Columbus Crew defense turned over a new leaf? Are they suddenly just a dominant defensive team a la SKC?
I think they certainly have. I do think they're going to be more challenged here going forward, and we can talk about that as we start to preview. But, you know, I do think this defense is playing better, and, you know, I'm going to have something about it hopefully tomorrow. But, you know, it's something that they realized, they being the coaching staff, realized needed to be fixed. You know, obviously you want to play attacking, exciting soccer, but you can only do that so far, especially in a league like this where the parity is what it is. You're not going to be able to, you know, have 70-80% of the ball like you see a Barcelona or a Manchester City in some games. You know, that can't be your only defensive option. You have to have some sort of structure, and I think what they've gotten better at is A, not turning the ball over nearly as frequently in bad situations, and then when it does turn over, especially further up the field, they're more organized. You know, it's not all guns blazing down the field. There's kind of a method to the madness of when you attack with a mind on your defensive responsibilities. And I also think the personnel has changed. You know, Lalas Abubakar obviously came in last year, but, you know, he's in his second year, more comfortable with the guys around him. Adding a Milton Valenzuela, I think, has been huge. We've talked about what he's able to do, especially when we've 1v1 defending. Jonathan Mensah's improvement. Josh Williams has been constantly steady. So you do that, and then you add in Harrison Offal, and, you know, when he wants to defend, he can be a pretty good defender. Typically, his thing, as we talked about earlier, is getting forward, and, you know, Greg's even mentioned that, you know, he thinks of Harrison as part of the attack more so than he does the defense, but he does have to defend, and, you know, I mentioned Pedro Santos's willingness to defend. Federico Higuain, you know, Josh Williams, tweeted after the Seattle game that, you know, it was a great effort by everybody, and credited Pipa for being the defensive, you know, player of the game. So you it's a team effort. It's 11 guys, and when 11 guys are bought into defending as a group, to pressuring where they need to recognizing certain situations, you're going to have a much better defense. And I think that's what you've seen so far this year. And, you know, ideally you want that to continue, even as the maybe attacking opponents get better here down these next few weeks.
It's definitely been so impressive from this back line. And we haven't even really talked about Zach Steffen either, who managed to get his way into the team of the week, albeit as the reserve goalkeeper. But Steffen there included, along with our good buddy Giassi Zardes, and of course Greg Berhalter as the manager. I don't know if either you know, you, Ralph, or Murph, or anybody at Mass Report keeps track of how many times Greg Berhalter's captured manager of the week, but he seems to be having, you keep seeing his name on those sheets, and
this is his second this year.
Okay, just a second.
Yeah, but I think I wrote this earlier. I think it's Zach's first, and Giassi was also on there after the Montreal game. Yeah, the Montreal game, and then Greg was after the 3-1 DC win.
Well, it seems like, and we're seeing crew players in the team of the week each week. Maybe it's just because they've played all the games, but you look at it, even with you know, playing three games during that stretch, only one game in hand for Atlanta United, which is the only team ahead of them in the Eastern Conference, with 25 points, Columbus 21 points. So, you know, again, you've got to make up some ground there. And then you do see, though, the concern is that New York City and Orlando City, both teams with games in hand against Columbus and more points per game on average. But, you know, all things being equal, I think most people would take a third of the way through the season second place in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, again, beating teams that they should have beat probably over those last three games. Although the Seattle game, you know, that's always impressive. That was a gutsy performance to come away with the draw. But I think it's pretty encouraging to see this team all in all, with the new players, with the turnover, the questions coming into the season about striker, the questions coming into the season about how are players going to deal with the fact that this team may or may not be moving at some point, and that entire background noise. And they're putting together strong performances, and a lot of credit, I think, has to go to Greg Berhalter. He seems to be the consistent strain throughout all of it.
I would follow Greg Berhalter into battle, and I would tell you why. Because his calm demeanor and just the way he handles everything is just so great, and I just love his intensity. Anytime you have a great conversation with him, it's awesome to see how calm and composed he is. But Bart, you've touched on it beautifully. With the Save the Crew drama and everything that's going around here with all this background noise, I want to give a shout out especially to the supporters that made the TIFO this weekend, because that was beautiful. I couldn't get a full scope of it at the time when it was unveiled, but I did see Sam's pictures later on. I mean, and the players really appreciated it. I think Harrison Offal posted on social media shortly after the game, if not today, that, you know, he was very thankful for it and just kind of implied it. He didn't outright say it, but the players know who they're fighting for, what they're fighting for. Not only are they going for a championship, but they see what everybody's doing to try to save this team, keep this team in Columbus. And, you know, it's paying dividends.
Shout out GCG Back, best supporters group in the game, for putting together that TIFO. Those guys are really, guys and girls, guys and gals, you know, all of them are really just beautiful, attractive people. And they, you should give them money. Just give
it's
them
almost like you know them, Bart.
Yeah, almost, but I don't. I've never met any of them. I'm not familiar with the supporters. I don't even know what a supporters group is. Anyway, we got some games going on next week. Columbus taking on the – and I don't know. I mean, there's a little bit – I guess for those of you, you know, our listeners that are following the, you know, legal battle to save the Gru, we should, you know, recap some of the action. In short, there's been, you know, on the legal side, it's kind of slowing down right now. We've got a lot going on within this next 90 days as the lawsuit has basically been put on pause. Although it's interesting to see, you know, what sort of negotiations might be happening in the background. We saw Alex Fisher at the game Wednesday tweeting pictures.
Feet away from Andy Loughnane too, by the way. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, I was going to say, we ran into Andy Loughnane too.
There were rumors that there were league officials at the game there Saturday. I don't know if there's
more than rumors.
Any of those. Okay, well, let's drop in.
I just know that they were there.
Can I put my conspiracy hat on for a second? Because it might be pertinent to what you're talking about, Murph, for once.
I'm not talking about anything.
There were people in the owner's box for the first time that I had seen since the playoff game against New York City.
I think there's people there every week. I think they just give it to people.
Okay.
I mean, I may be wrong, but I know there's people there at least sometimes that aren't Andy and Anthony or those people.
Who?
But the owner of the team, Anthony.
Oh, we have one of those?
Owner.
Oh, sorry. Investor operator. My bad.
Oh.
Oh. You know, we also had an interesting, you know, little dust up there on Wednesday at Cruz Stadium. Obviously, if maybe a good thing there weren't potential league, although who knows, maybe if Alex Fisher was there, you know, there were maybe potential in investors in the team, and they hopefully didn't get served any contaminated food, as we learned that Anthony Precourt is stewarding our community assets like a boss. What with all the lights out in the you know, at the stadium, and then the health code violations Wednesday. Fortunately, all the food was probably up to code by Saturday. I didn't touch any of it.
My halftime hot dogs were good.
Well, see, that's good. Here's one observation about all that, and then I will kind of, you know, we can move on. But if I am a international insurance company that has paid team record fees for the naming rights for a stadium, I probably would not be really thrilled to learn that my name, my brand, is getting associated with health violations. And when you are going to go and complain about the lack of corporate support that this team and this organization is getting, you need to then recognize what you are showing them for their sponsorship dollars. What are they getting in return? Because we've talked about it, I've talked about it with you guys and ranted about, you know, the fact that this team isn't on and isn't advertised for, and how that's going to be, you shouldn't expect to get good, you know, sponsor, big $1 million sponsorships for t-shirts if you're not putting them out there and there's zero visibility. And you shouldn't expect to get a big sponsorship for your stadium if you are letting it be infested with mice or putting warm towels on pretzels. That is disgusting, and it does not help their brand, and certainly doesn't give you or look like a strong product that you are marketing. So I mean it's infuriating. I hate seeing it because I love Maffrey Stadium, and I think after this we're gonna have the team saved, and there's gonna be a new stadium at some point. But I love Maffrey Stadium, and to see what they've, you know, let it come to, it angers me. That's all.
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly. Moving on, the New England Revolution coming up. Let's preview it now.
I think this is the beginning of one of the more interesting stretches of the season for the team. You know, New England, while, you know, the last few years have not been great, have, under Brad Friedel and surprisingly to me, have put together a decent season here. You know, they're above the playoff line, you know, which doesn't mean a ton now, but it, you know, shows that they're putting together some results. Obviously, they had the whole Lee Wynn debacle going on for a while. He's now moved on. But you look at this next stretch, and they've got, you know, New England Saturday, Kansas City the following Sunday, Toronto at home, the Red Bulls, then Atlanta, then LAFC. And Real Salt Lake after that. So you've got all of these teams except for the Red Bulls, or except for Toronto, who I think we all can agree is better than what they've played so far this year, are above that playoff line. Whereas you look at the schedule so far, and you don't see many, if any, teams above the playoff line. So I think we're going to get a good sense starting Saturday with where this team really stands in MLS. You know, is this a team that, you know, at least in the first half of the season, we can really talk about as a playoff team, as a team that could do something special this year? Or, you know, is this a team that's benefited from a little bit of an easy schedule so far this season? I think that we're going to learn that this is a pretty good team. You know, I don't know if they're going to win all these games. You know, several of them are on the road, you know, two in a row starting Saturday. But I think it's going to be a good test, and I think we're going to see that this team deserves to be in the playoffs. But you've got to take care of your results. And so far they've done that. But Saturday, you know, Gillette Stadium on turf, you know, hasn't always been the most welcoming place for Columbus in terms of results. So, you know, I'm interested to see how they do with this. This is, as I mentioned, a New England team that's found ways to get results. They're playing well at home. So I think it's going to be a challenge for them.
In New England, I think, you know, a lot of people have been surprised with Brad Friedel so far behind it. I want to see, though, can we touch on a little bit, and Pat, or if anyone who's kind of followed the Lee Nguyen saga, for our listeners that haven't, what happened and why is probably the most accomplished player in recent New England Revolution history suiting up for LA now?
Well, I think a lot of it goes back to, and, you know, I didn't follow it super closely. I paid attention, you know, just as a casual observer. But I think a lot of it goes back to, you know, you're dealing with the Kraft family. And if you know anything about the New England Patriots and the NFL, they are going to do what's best financially for the team, no matter who you are, what your name is, what you've done in the past. And, you know, that's seen a lot of guys move on from the Patriots that, you know, have been surprising. You know, they've made sure to take care of guys like Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, but, you know, they aren't going to mess around with salaries if they think it puts them in a bad position. And I think that's what happened with Lee Wynn. Was you know, yes, he's been, as you mentioned, one of the best players for that franchise, definitely the best player in recent years. But I think they saw, you know, that they have some other things going for them coming into this year. I assume Brad Friedel had a plan that, you know, may or may not have included Lee Wynn. But, you know, obviously they started off the season decently well and didn't feel like they needed to be strong held into giving him a contract that they weren't comfortable with. So, you know, at the trade deadline, he was dealt to LAFC. I think, you know, they got a decent amount back for him. I noticed it was less than the Justin Merrim amount, which, you know, good for Justin for earning a higher transfer fee than Lee Wynn. But, yeah, I think, you know, it all ends well in this situation because he ends up with a club that can probably use him and that he can express himself a little bit more. Obviously, he's going to play since he wasn't playing with New England. And, you know, New England gets a little bit in return and can move on and doesn't have to deal with that kind of hanging over their head.
So with the fact that we've got obviously Pedro Santos out for this game with the hamstring, and taking fact as well that you've got Mike Grella coming back from injury and you're playing on that turf at Gillette Stadium, do you think it's probably, I would guess if I'm Greg Berhalter, I would be very cautious about putting Mike Grella out there for a while. I think you want to play, you know, long term again coming back from this injury, and that turf can be unforgiving. But I don't know if that's something that you've all talked with him about yet, or what are you guys thinking about what this lineup might look like without Pedro in the picture in New England?
Well, I think, you know, we touched on it earlier, is, you know, you're going to get a look at a couple of these youngsters, you know, Nico Hanser, Christian Martinez, and Luis Argudo. But I believe a couple reports, and again, maybe Pat can confirm this, is that Sosa's not far away from appearing either, is, you know, per Greg Berhalter. I think the fitness levels are, they're still trying to work to get the fitness levels up a little bit more so on him. So you may see him pop up. But as for Mike Grella, I wouldn't expect him, or maybe if anything, potentially limited minutes, as we've established on this podcast, plastic grass is not the greatest thing for those rehabbing from devastating knee injuries.
Go ahead. Well, just Greg said today in regards to Mike that, you know, they're still going to be very careful with him. You know, just because he started and was able to go 70 minutes doesn't mean he's back entirely. You know, now Greg also said going into the Seattle game that he wasn't ready to start and alluded to the fact that he probably wouldn't start over this stretch. So, you know, we'll see. But I do think he's certainly being truthful when he says that they're going to be careful. They're going to monitor him this week, see how his body responded from that game. And yeah, the turf is certainly a factor, I think, as you head into that. You know, obviously you want him to be able to play on turf eventually, so maybe you try him off the bench or something, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's not starting this one.
And I don't see why you can't go. I mean, you've got a decent amount of depth at the wings. Why you can't go with somebody like Hanson and Martinez, or Martinez and Agudo, or Agudo and Hanson? I mean, there's so many options, I think, from a depth standpoint that he can go with, that I think I'm not really sure I'd worry about it, even playing in New England and even playing on turf. Yeah, Gillette Stadium has not been kind to the crew. Yeah, so is Toyota Park, and so is other places. But, you know, I think just the form that the team is in and how they played against New England when they played here at home, you can play the matchup game, and you can play it well, and you have the depth to do it. So I think Greg will be able to put together hopefully a lineup that is that will, you know, correspond with what the situation is.
We'll certainly have to wait and see. We'll be getting some picks in here, but as I give you guys some time to think on that, just speaking of lineups, just a little bit of housekeeping. Christian Martinez, a lineup he might be in come this summer, is the Panamanian lineup for the World Cup. He was selected to the 35-player provisional team by Coach Hernan Dario Gomez. So it'll be interesting. I think he's got – it's about early June when they have to finalize that roster. I think it might be – you know, I'd be a little bit surprised to see Christian Martinez, but, you know, for a player who's in good form right now in MLS, certainly credit to him for getting the pick, and we'll follow it closely. And Crew fans might have someone to root for in the World Cup this summer, you know, even with USA not being in the picture. But let's bring it back now to this upcoming game here on against New England with our picks. Patrick Murphy, why don't you lead us off?
I don't feel good about Columbus winning this game. I'm just because I think New England, you know, obviously caused them some issues when they were here on that 2-2 draw a few weeks ago. I do think Columbus can go in there and get a result, though. I think that this team is confident. We talked about how this defense is playing. While I do think New England's a step up in level from the Seattle, Philadelphia, Chicago, I don't think that they're that big of a step. I think, you know, I think they have some weapons. Obviously, Juan Agudelo was a factor here. Yeah. I'm gonna say they play to a 1-1 draw. That was me deliberating that whole time.
There you go. 1-1 from Spurf. Sam, what do you got?
Oh, boy. See, I'm having the same feelings that Smurf has. But he already took my score prediction, so I feel the same way. I think that the defense steps up, and this game turns out to be kind of like the Seattle game. So I'm going to call for a 0-0 tie, which I'm not totally upset about getting the point on the road.
All right, 0-0 from Sam. Ralph, what you going with?
I'm going to go to VAR for this one. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you know, Crew SC, great week, particularly in Seattle, getting a point when nobody thought it was possible. A great Saturday or a great Wednesday game, even though it was boring as heck to watch. And Saturday, what more could you say about that? So I don't know, though. Like you guys have all touched on, going on the road, home team FC, you know, and playing on turf. Gillette always freaks me out. But I'm going to be the bad guy. So I'm going to go with a 2-1.
You're already the bad guy.
I'm going to go with a 2-1 New England Revolution victory.
You know, I was on the fence for a bit, you know, going into this. And now that I've gotten, you know, the answers for all you guys, I thought maybe it was going to be a 3-1 Crew victory. Instead, I'm more sure than ever that they're going to continue the clean sheet streak. 3-0, Harrison Offal with not one, but two goals, and we're going to give one to Nico Hansen as well. Yeah, Harrison's due. He should have had like at least two in both of these last two games. Nico Hansen also gets one because he's due, and Crew go on for the longest streak, maybe in franchise history, I'm not sure, of consecutive shutouts with a win in New England against Brad Friedel, who will then say something like, crikey, put another shrimp on the Bobby, mate, like, I mean, because he doesn't, I mean, he's got the weirdest,
not even the wrong accent. You're on the wrong continent altogether.
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard Brad Friedel talk now? he doesn't sound like he's from England. He doesn't sound like he's a Mary Sider, you know, played in Everton or everything,
or that he's from Cleveland.
Yeah, or sure as hell doesn't sound like he's from
never
Cleveland
heard
anymore.
Anybody talk like that from Cleveland.
No. Well, I know. And obviously, yeah, my weird kind of Crocodile Dundee, you know, not even really trying to sound Australian. I just couldn't think of a British phrase. And so I went with an Australian phrase. Anyway, any other parting thoughts, guys, before this, as we try to write this, even though the train has already fallen over and is off the rails?
I'll say this real quick. Don't freak out if the Crew go out to New England and lose. Just, it's okay. Shit happens. Just,
they won't.
Jeez, okay. We got a rating, Sam. Come on.
I'm single-handedly ruining the rating. Shut up.
Okay. Happy trails, John Bush. Really cool to see that retirement ceremony on Saturday. And really cool to actually just, I posted something on social media earlier this week that a year ago I was watching him play for Indy 11. with a ball cap on, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever because he was trying to shield the sun from his eyes. And then, you know, I was there to see his retirement. So really cool to see him and really cool of him to accept the Save the Crew jersey after the game outside in front of the statue of Lamar Hunt. So good on you, Mr. John Bush. Thank you.
Wouldn't talk about Save the Crew during the interview, though.
He did. Yeah, that was an interesting thing. Andrew
Probably
Erickson,
a condition for actually getting honored. Like, is like, okay, well, you can't actually say anything about it, though.
Andrew Erickson asked him a question, and he very, very politely sidestepped it, which was understandable. But after everybody went home and, you know, he took a jersey and took a scarf from STC. So good on him, Mr. Bush. Thank you for the memory, sir. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, he showed him where he was. He was on the record for Save the Crew off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he probably just, yeah, had to kind of agree not to say anything. So once, like, there wasn't anything else they could do because the game and all the ceremonies stuff was over, okay, now I'm going to go hang out with the Save the Crew people and accept the Save the Crew jersey and scarf in your stadium. See ya. Peace.
Also, slightly unrelated, actually definitely unrelated, Justin Merrim, congrats mm-hmm. on his first goal. Of the season, scored for Orlando City yesterday.
On Mother's Day again.
Yep, that's what he does. All right, well, that should wrap it up for this week. We'll catch you next week, though. Until then, bye, buddies.
Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on. Really stop. Good, stop.
This
stop.
Is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We will probably put this in at the end. 3,